Hey folks, thanks so much for your support through listening. If you really want to take that support to another level, we'd love it if you would support us by liking and following us wherever you listen to your podcast. Now what would be really cool is if you help us fly this kite on pages like www.patreon.com. A simple search on that page for Kites and Strings will provide a gateway to donate as little as $1 per month. Cool perks are also available, so please check us out. And thanks so much for listening today. You're going to get a really fun episode with Adriana Gavazzoni. But be on the lookout. In the upcoming weeks, we're going to have musicians from Canada and from Chicagoland, an anime voice actor from Australia, and soon, in the spirit of spring and gardening, we're going to have a topiary artist from London. Welcome to Kites and Strings, the podcast about creativity. My name is Steve Plume. My co-host, Catherine Shinnock, and I are both registered art therapists and licensed clinical professional counselors in addition to being creatives. In this podcast, we explore creativity and especially that tension that's often experienced by creative folks. It's that same tension experienced between the artful dancing kite and its stable, grounded string. Along the way, we interview fabulous guests who have found their own success managing that tension and living their own creative lives. Today's guest is Adriana Gavazzoni. She's from Brazil. She's a lawyer, a law professor, and she has a series of best-selling novels. Her most recent is called Sketches of Life, and her previous series of three is called Hidden Motives. Please feel nothing but confident and emboldened as you browse Amazon's erotic thriller pages. And please know that Adriana is all of the same as she grabs her string and flies her kite. Also note that today Catherine is a trooper and is recording remotely. She's at a place where there's a few background noises and just a few tech issues.
What is it that you get from traveling? How does that inspire you?
All my books are inspired about my time abroad, my trilogy. I wrote it having the United States and France as a background. And I studied in France. I love both countries. I was in an interchange when I was 18 in the United States, and I fell in love with the country.
Wow.
Almost every year, I go to the United States, to France, and then for a new country that I don't know.
Okay.
I love to travel. That inspires me a lot to meet different people. You can write about different places. I love that.
The interchange that you had spoke of, is that something that you had participated in?
Yes, when I was 18, it was a short interchange program. But I was very impressed about the United States. I think it got in my heart and my mind. And I decided I have to travel more often. And when I got my own money, because I was being financed by my parents on that time.
So you caught the bug.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the bug. It was the same with France. Those are my favorite countries in the world. They are completely different, and I love both. And I can measure how much I love one or the other if I love one more of them. No, I need both.
When you come to the States, where do you typically go?
I love, really, really love to go to New York, but I try to go to other places mm-hmm. every time because it's going to be biased to go just right. for one place. So I've been to California, I've been to many other states. 2019, I've been to the Iowa because I have a friend's daughter that used to live here, and she got married there.
Okay.
So I've been there to know another place. It was very good, very cold. It was in December.
Iowa and New York are two very different places.
Very different indeed. But I just love to make discoveries in my trips.
So when you travel, is it something where you like plan out where you want to go and you kind of look at the places you want to see? Or when you get there, do you like meet people and ask them for like, how do you navigate the places that you go to get the rich experience you're looking for?
My family used to make a joke. My nickname is Drica.
Okay.
It's a short for Adriana. and they used to call me Dricas Tour because they say I plan everything. I go to sites, I talk to the natives, and I ask what is good to do, where I can eat without getting ruined, and what places are beautiful to visit. I don't want to feel a tourist. Of course, I make tourist discoveries, but I want to eat what the Americans are eating. I want to go to the same place. I don't want to feel a tourist all the time. So I plan everything. I leave some windows so I can discover something while I'm in the place. But usually I plan very well my trips. So whenever we go, usually I travel with my husband, but once a year we try to do travel with my parents and my stepson and daughter. So I plan everything. I send to them and I say, do you have any kind of opinions? Usually my stepdaughter has some opinions of places she would like to visit. The rest just say, it's okay. We are out there.
There's certainly some things that you put on the checklist that you need to go to when you go to a place. But I like that you talk to the locals to get their sense of what would be the real experience.
Yeah, and I usually, when I go to a place that is completely different from the United States and France, I try to talk to a native to know how to behave. I don't want to arrive to a place and to be rude or impolite. I ask small things like, how much should I tip?
Right, yeah.
So I try to know the environment before landing.
Okay, cool. It sounds like you try to make the city or the country that the story is set in sort of part of the book, part of the story itself. It's like it's its own character.
Yes, I have a thought that I think comes from being a lawyer, that I can't write things that I can't prove. Mm. So, of course, I write fiction. Mm-hmm. But if I talk about the restaurant, I must go to that restaurant and I must check. It's exactly how I'm going to write.
Okay.
Because I want one day when one of my readers travels and search for the place, he says, hey, it's here. Mm-hmm. It's the same place. I could feel I was here in the book. Now I can sense what she wrote about.
So it sounds like you really like, you weave in the culture, and it's not like a travel guide, but it could be.
Yeah, I think when I retire from law, I'm going just to travel and be a writer, and maybe I'm going to be a tourist guide. I love.
I love stories where the city settings serve as another character. Adriana seems to subscribe to that same idea. Now we're going to hear a bit about Adriana's earliest writing, and we're going to hear the connection between practicing law, writing, and the benefit of a little diagnosis that she's found a way to work with. So parents, take a break from kids bouncing off the wall and take notes.
So now I understand that you have been a lawyer for
30 years,
now.
A lot.
Holy cow.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So was that your first
My first profession, my first decision when I was 12 years old. I'm a voracious reader, so I was vacationing, and I had finished all the books in my father's shelf. Last one. This one was a very thick book, and it was a legal book, and I just loved to know that there were rules to guide people's life. And I asked my father, hey, what's that for? And he said, that's a book that lawyers use. And I said, I want to be a lawyer. And he laughed because I was too young. And the year before, I wanted to be a scientist. The other year, I want to be a car race driver. And he said, okay. But that idea got inside my mind, and I wanted to be a lawyer. And I began the university. I was 17, And I was very, very young indeed when I decided to be a lawyer. Here I am, a lawyer after 30 years.
Which is remarkable in of itself. And I know that you have been a professor in law and you've been a lawyer, and that certainly is a known and understood profession. When did you decide to write?
Since I was a kid. Okay. I always loved to listen to stories. My parents used to tell stories for me. And when I could read by myself, I started to read like a crazy. And then one day I decided I had to write my own novel. I believe I was around 11, 12 years old, just a kid. And I decided to write a romance. And okay. I was so old, but you don't know me. I used to hide adult novels to read. So when my parents went to bed, they write very adult material. So it was not a naive novel I was writing about. It was already something not for my age. And I was very afraid. I fear my mother could read because my mother was always finding things inside my drawers and things like that. When it was over, I just destroyed, put inside a well and forgot about it for some years. But it was how it began.
See, wait a minute. Your writing career began with a secret romance novel that you destroyed in a well. That's a story right there.
There's a story. Then I became a writer. The idea was there. One day I'm going to write a novel. One day. And in Brazil, when you defend your clients, you have to write the story. Like a writer, you tell stories. They are real stories. But some of my clients, when they read the stories, they used to say, you should be a writer. You told my story in a way that I loved it. Mm. For me, it's just like reading a novel. And the idea was growing. And one day I was traveling with one of my lawyers. And he told me, do you know, I'm writing a novel. And I said, oh, yeah, really? And I thought, I want to write one. And he told me, let's do a bet. You start yours, I start mine, and let's see who finishes first. Okay, I finished 4 novels, and he didn't finish his first one.
Like, are you a competitive person?
Very, very competitive person. Okay. I'm very competitive. But it was not the reason. I think it was the start that I needed. And I started to write, and I couldn't stop. But I when I wrote this first novel, I was not thinking about publishing. I just want to write for myself.
Yeah. Do you think it would have been different if you sat down to write that first novel with the plan to publish it? Would that have changed the story? Do you think it would have changed your pacing? Would it have changed anything?
I don't think so, because I always write for myself first. I write and I rewrite and I check and I destroy some pages and I do over, because if I start thinking about publishing or what someone is going to like or dislike, I can't finish a novel like that. I have to please myself.
Do you always have a book going? Do you always have a novel written?
Or two. The last one I'm finishing, it's going for editions now. It's going to be finished in 1 month, I think. I think I feel a void if I'm not writing something.
Yeah. And because I've known some people that, like, they go and lock themselves in a cabin somewhere and they just write for weeks on end. Because just as we were talking earlier before we got on, you've got clients, you know, people calling you. You're still lawyering, but you're also writing. So you're switching gears, it seems, pretty quickly.
Yes, I have attention deficit with hyperactivity. I can do plenty of things at the same time. It's a little bit crazy. It's like to have a frog inside your mind. The way to deal with attention deficit was to create a routine of discipline. It's the only way I can get things done. So usually I wake up at 7 a.m. I take my breakfast with my husband, and then I lock myself for 1 hour, one exactly hour, and I write. I don't care if it's good, if it's not. I'm going to check it on the other day. I have that discipline. Because I don't believe in muses coming to your head. You have to lock yourself in some place to write. No, I just use my imagination, put my imagination to work, and I have plenty. And if I need to research something, because I love to give a very faithful background to the stories, I try to split my time, and usually it's 10 minutes to read the chapter I wrote the day before, and then the rest of the time for writing. It's how I work. But that also comes from being a lawyer. You have to work with a tight schedule. If you don't respect that schedule, you're going to damage your clients' rights. So, and I can't wait for inspiration to tell their stories for the judge. When I need to do, I need to do. So stop doing what you're doing. Start writing, research to support. I would like to be this kind of people that muses come and sing in the ear, but that's not me.
Well, it's funny because as you're talking, what it sounds like to me is your muses are always there and they are always singing and they almost sound like children that you need to like organize so you can actually hear them. Call it muses, call it attention deficit disorder. They're there and you just got to give them their windows, give them their time slots. You can have 45 minutes in the morning and here's how we're going to schedule that. And you can, I will be here tomorrow morning so you can come back tomorrow morning. It's kind of cool.
You describe it perfectly. In my second novel, one of my characters has attention deficit. I needed to deal with that. And when she takes her first pill for attention deficit, she says, oh, my mind is always like ballerinas dancing the can-can, performing the can-can.
When
I took that, I could separate the ballerinas, make them leave the stage. And now I'm going to put wherever I want on that stage. But I don't do with that, that with drugs. I do with discipline. Sometimes I'm hearing a judge talking and the muses start to sing and they say, oh my God, what he's saying now would give a wonderful scene. And I take a quick note on my phone, something like that. I used to have two phones. I'm using one now to talk with you. There is another one here. And I send notes from one phone to the other. Don't forget that phrase.
Wow. I've been in those situations where, you know, I'm talking to a client and they say something. It's like, I need to capture that, right? I want to grab that later for a song that I'm writing. You're doing the same thing. You're hearing something, even in something that feels so removed, like listening to a judge talk.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Once I was with a driver, I got a cab. The driver told a phrase and I thought, oh my God, that's magnificent. I'm going to add to that character is going to talk. That phrase. And it happens all the time.
I think there's some use to calling ADD a muse. Imagine if that were more our practice. All of a sudden, our kids are not damaged, but gifted. A bit more on that later, but for now, you're going to hear that, like me, Adriana had her difficulties in math. I wonder if she had the same rigid and unimaginative math teachers that I had while I was growing up.
It sounds like you're always flowing creatively, but you have such a respect for like how you became a lawyer, rules and structure and discipline. And as you're talking, I don't feel any conflict between the two, that you found a system where your order and your structure channels and allows for a smoother flow of the creativity and lets you like hear these things like the judge says or the cab driver says and capture it and organize it.
That was not easy to become like that because I was diagnosed with attention deficit very late in my life. I was near 40 and I didn't know what I had, but I really felt all during all my life, I had the feeling that I was different. I knew I was different. I knew I could be a genius in something and I could be very stupid in others because I couldn't concentrate. It was always mathematics, for example. I can't. I used to daydream in a classroom while the teacher was teaching math. So I developed some mechanisms to help me. And when I was diagnosed, because my stepson was diagnosed, and I thought, oh, my God, I don't know what this kid has, but what he has, I do. I have the same. I decided to go through the same tests, and then bingo, I got attention deficit with hyperactivity. But it was too late for me to take drugs, and I don't like any kind of medicine that is not natural. So I decided not to take anything and continue the procedure I developed during my whole life. My father helped me a lot in that because he's a very disciplined man. He taught me a lot about discipline with lots of love. He never thought I was different. He thought I was a genius. And he always told me that you are perfect. You are very intelligent. You are lazy in some things. But I know it's because you don't like you are lazy. And I was not lazy. I was disconnected. And that helped me a lot. But when I was 20, I started to go to shrinks. And I've been to shrinks for 20, 25 years. To try to understand me because I really felt completely different from all my family.
Do you still feel, like, what is your relationship now with feeling different?
I feel lucky because I know I could overcome lots of difficulties and that life could have been smoother if I was normal. But I feel special. I worked with myself in a way to feel special. I know I can do many different things. I have many interests. I'm always studying something new. I'm curious. And that made me a very happy person. I'm happy because of that. But also, I found people like me. My husband has attention deficit. My stepkids have attention deficit. My best friend, I discovered they have attention deficit. So in some way, you start attracting people like you. And I'm not different from them. Yes, I'm different from my family, but thanks God, I have the best family in the world. I have the best father in the world, always supportive, always making me feel intelligent, capable. And my mom is a person that taught me about being independent, a strong woman. So I'm lucky. I didn't feel like that when I was a teen, but now I feel like
that. It sounds like you've definitely learned to get control of it with the discipline. Have you ever read Laura Webb, I believe? She wrote a couple books called The Gift of ADHD.
No, never.
And she talks about, I mean, and I believe this to be true, that ADHD, ADD, there's a real imagination. There's a lot of jumping from ideas, and there's a lot of, even in your own brain, you can kind of like follow an idea and it's exciting for a minute, but then you have to jump to another idea. And she writes of that. And it's one of those things like you're talking about, if you can develop the executive skill and you can learn to put the things in their place, and harness all these ideas, it can be a wonderful thing. And that's what I'm hearing as you're talking.
I'm going to try to find those books because I feel happy. I'm a middle-aged person and I feel happy.
Yeah,
I'm really happy. I've been through 3 divorces before. I'm in my 4th marriage. because of this always jumping from one thing to the other. Mm-hmm. It was the same for feelings until I could find myself and what I really wanted and to understand why I behaved in that way and how I should behave in order to find happiness.
So we know that structure, discipline, and schedules are helpful. But I think, too, that kids, adults, and folks like me who have also been diagnosed with ADD need to feel healthy doses of just letting things fly. Think of it as recess, which has been proven to help kids in school. I think Adriana needs that regimented period of time to allow her a needed flight of fancy. By the way, I reference an author who specializes in ADD and ADHD, who has written many books for kids, parents of ADDers, and adults with ADD. I remembered part of her name. It's actually Laura Honus Webb. She speaks of the five gifts of ADD: creativity, attunement to nature, interpersonal intuition, energetic enthusiasm, and emotional sensitivity. Sounds like a creative type to me. Next up, Catherine turns the page to explore Adriana's creative process.
So with the ideas jumping, and I love the visual of the line of ballerinas, when you have an idea to write a novel and your process for writing a novel, do you write it like beginning to end, or are you jumping like, here's a great scene, I don't know where it's going to fit in, and kind of like write all these little pieces and then puzzle them together? Like, what is your process?
It's just like a grasshopper. No clear direction. I know I want to write a story and I know more or less about what it's going to be. But when I start writing, I start doing like when I cook. I start experimenting, adding flavor. So my first novel, I just want to write about a shrink, because I think I've been to so many shrinks. I wanted to write about one. And she's the perfect shrink. Then I decided her specialty was going to be abnormal sexual behavior. And I started to research about that. Then I thought, okay, the story is good, but I'm going to kill someone. And I decided to kill her during a sex game. So I decided that shrink would help the lawyer.
Oh,
and then
okay.
I thought, no. But I think I need to add a serial killer here. It's going to be much more interesting and funny if I add a serial killer. So I add one, and it's just like this.
It really sounds like your process, it just unfolds in front of you.
Exactly. And usually my readers can guess the end, because I can't guess the end until the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
I give so many possibilities, and I think I'm going here. No, I'm going there. No, this way is better. And then in the end, I know where to go, and usually it's a surprise because it happens very spontaneously.
Oh my God. I love that. I was talking to someone earlier this week about screenwriting, and their process was the exact opposite of yours. Their process was, I have to know the end and the beginning, because if I know where I'm landing, then I can just design the path to get to the end. And I absolutely love that you're like, and the end is a surprise to me. Like, I didn't know it was going to end this way. And that's a surprise to the readers. Like, I'm very much inspired by that.
Yeah, because sometimes in the middle of a book, I fall in love with a character and I think, I love this character too much. It's time to kill. So I kill that character and begin to develop a new one that I'm going to fall in love. So it's just like that.
It sounds to me like you create the box and you allow your muse to kind of bounce around in that box. And it's like you get into the story and then the idea, call it a muse again, call it whatever you want. The idea of maybe this character should die.
Yeah.
Gets whispered in your ear. And you're like, okay, I'm going to follow that.
And then I suffer because I killed someone. I like it, but I can't go back because I just wanted to kill someone. Crazy. Yeah. But it's like that. I create the box and maybe the muses are really inside that box.
It's like, okay, I'll give you the box. This is what we're doing. This is roughly the story that I've come up with. Dance.
Mm.
Yeah. And I really try to follow a line, but it's impossible. I think it's my condition. I can blame. Yesterday I was talking to my stepdaughter. We are watching a series and I said a phrase and she said, oh, I love that phrase. Why don't you put that in a book? And I said, yeah, great idea. So I've been to the book I had just finished and changed the end to accommodate that phrase.
I love it.
Nothing is established for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just let things flow. It's my moment of joy writing, mm-hmm. so I let things flow.
Now we're going to hear a bit about the series of books that Adriana has written called Hidden Motives, as well as what seems to be the start of a new series of books. We're also going to explore a bit about Adriana's lawyering and her passion for so many things.
So now you have 4 books out, correct?
Yes, 4.
And it's sort of a part of a series, as I understand. At least a few of them are.
The first 3 books are part of a series called Hidden Motives.
Yeah, yeah.
The fourth is independent, but it comes from a character from one of my novels.
Okay.
But mm-hmm. it's completely independent, set on in a historical background, because when I was writing the trilogy, she was an old lady. She was born between the First and the Second World War. Mm-hmm. It was very complicated to research about all that. And now I just finished a second book that I think it's going to be another series, because I had to continue the life of that character.
Mm-hmm. So what was it about that particular character that spoke to you that said she needed her own book?
I had a wonderful grandmother. My grandmother was a teacher for 40 years in a time where she had to horseback to arrive to the place where she teach, like 1 hour to go, 1 hour to go back. And she was amazing. She was amazing. I really loved my grandmother, and she was very advanced for her time. So I wrote that character thinking about my grandma. And she was someone that could give great advices for her granddaughter, always able to have an open mind. But she didn't arrive at 8 years old being like that, because her life was easy, mm-hmm. As my grandmother wasn't. She got married when she was 15.
Wow.
She had 10 kids. In very hard times, her parents were Italian immigrants. They had to cope with lack of everything. Mm-hmm. And she could really be someone. Of course, it's not my grandmother. Right. It's a lot of fiction. Mm-hmm. But she's also an immigrant, a daughter from another immigrant, mm-hmm. that an American that goes to France, marries a French woman, and have this kid that is raised between both cultures, American and French, and she must immigrate to United States to escape the war and the German invasion in France, having to cope with a lot of difficulties. And I talk about another girl in this book that lost everybody during the war and had to survive.
Mm-hmm.
She's an exotic dancer in a French cabaret, mm-hmm. to survive. And she becomes a spy.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that spy helps to catch war criminals, to take them for murder justice, uh-huh. and to be judged. And she becomes a sniper. She has a hell of an eye and she becomes a sniper.
I'm listening to you. I'm watching you. Your arms kind of going. Your stories and these characters, you're passionate about it.
I'm a passionate person for everything I do. That's the reason I divorced so many times. When the passion was over, I couldn't see the meaning of staying there. And I'm very passionate about everything. I'm Italian. I talk with my hands all the time.
I was wondering if we were some type of law podcast and you were talking about lawyering, whether there'd be the same passion.
Yeah, sure. Because I'm passionate about all my cases and it's personal for me. I'm very competitive. I have to win. And I know it's for my client, but it's also for myself. I hate losing. It makes me sad and angry to lose because one of my principles is I get a client if I believe in his case. Mm. I can't believe he's going to lose his case because he has the rights, he has the documents, he has the proofs. So why I'm losing? And sometimes it's just in the judge's mind and I can do almost anything. And no, I can't. I'm passionate about law. I wouldn't do it for so long if I wasn't passionate about it.
Soon, Catherine's going to pick up on Adriana's love for people. We hear about Adriana's practices in eavesdropping and some of the things that she's not too fond of, such as writing self-help and kids. Soon we're going to hear about the trial and error process of creating a lifestyle that has structure with big doses of pleasure. And we're going to discover how Adriana tried to hide some erotica behind the English language.
It sounds like not only are you competitive, but like the sense that I get from you is that you really enjoy people.
I do. I love to listen to people. Their stories just, I make a movie inside my mind when they are telling their stories. I love to go to places like a cafe in Paris to sit and listen to people by my side talking about their lives. I start to imagine, wow, their lives are like this. I can see the movie of their lives. I'm an amateur astrologer, and I respect a lot the difference, and I believe that I've learned from my astrologer, my teacher who taught me astrology. I learned that when I was 30 years old, and it opened another universe for me because I understood people are different. Mm-hmm. They are unique. So many stories to be told. I love to live. I love to talk. I know you didn't realize that. I love people. I get along with almost everybody.
Not that we're going to throw any individuals or any professions under a bus here. Is there something that you're like, you look at and say, God, that just would bore the hell out of me?
Yeah. Even in law, for example, I couldn't be a labor lawyer. I would sleep in front of my client. I can't. And I couldn't be a doctor because I'm not passionate about healing, yes, but I hate blood. Okay. So I couldn't overcome that. And as a writer, I couldn't write self-help. Okay. And to have a kid, I don't have kids. I'm not passionate about children. Children is annoying.
Have you ever gone down a path and realized this isn't for me and you had to back out of it? I mean, did you ever do a labor law case and think, this is why I don't do this?
Just one labor law case because a friend asked me for a favor. He couldn't do a hearing. I love that friend. Yeah. I did. But sometimes in my life, I had to be another person in order to please another person, and that's one of the reasons some of my marriages didn't, I couldn't go on because I have to deform myself, and I can't do that. I'm only to stay in a place where I feel comfortable.
We always try to put a finger on that that balancing act? And how do people find that balance in their lives? And I hear that you shift between them quite a bit, but sometimes I'm sure that hour that you determine that you're going to write, there are probably a dozen people trying to get into that space.
Yes, you have to tell to yourself what you want in your life. You need a moment of pleasure. When I write, it's a moment of pleasure. And sometimes it's going to collide. It's up to you to avoid that. I cope with that, turning off my telephone during this time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just think it's just a matter what is more important in that moment.
Okay.
What do you really want for your life? And what you need to do in order to get that?
Yeah.
Oh, what I would like nowadays? I would like to be a writer 100% of the time, but I have to pay the bills and my books still don't pay my bills. So in order to have everything, you have to balance responsibility with pleasure. Yeah. Pleasure must be in your life in some way, but you also have to be rational about how you are going to achieve your goals.
Yeah. Pleasure and like prioritizing yourself. I hear that when you take that hour, you're okay with prioritizing yourself and prioritizing your pleasure. And that's the balance and the structure that has shown up for you in the responsibility, which would be like the string, and the pleasure, which would be like the kite.
We need that in order to be balanced. I fight a lot in my life to consider myself a balanced person. And nowadays, I respect that. I respect my time for writing. I respect 1 hour for working out because I know it's important for my mind, for my house, for my body. But one must learn how to get that in order to survive in this world and in order to respect himself. I think it's too beautiful to say, oh, just follow your dreams, follow your dreams. Yeah, it's beautiful. You have to eat and you have to keep your independence. Mm-hmm. So you have to find something in the middle of all that that allows you to have everything.
Yeah, and like kind of building on that, is there's so many different ways to find that balance in the middle. And in doing this podcast, we've heard, you know, from a variety of people how they do that. And I can hear like the flow of your story of like being as a kid, having the attention deficit disorder and not knowing kind of where that was, but having your family be very supportive and hold you, and then finding law and really liking the structure of that, and then finding writing and like being able to use the skills that you developed, the discipline that you developed, the research skills that you've developed to organize your creativity and to give it that place to really grow. It feels so much to me like your creative process and your professional process as a lawyer has the like yin and yang of both of those things in it.
Yes, but as I said before, it was like building a wall.
Yeah.
It was a little brick every day. And sometimes you have to undo the wall because the brick was not put in the correct place. And I think that's life.
Yeah.
Life is like this.
Yeah.
I think one of the main things in my life is that I've tried to face everything as a lesson. Mm-hmm. Failures, defeats. Mm-hmm. If I don't like, I try to recognize they are lessons. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to learn with that.
Yeah. I'm thinking too, from what I'm hearing in your story, that author part has, you've known it's been with you forever. And then time went by, you became a lawyer. And then you realized as a lawyer, there were these parts where you were writing about your clients because that's what you do. And then it's like, wait a minute, that's waking up an author part of me. And then you decided, I'm going to actually write a book. I'm actually going to publish a book. I'm going to sell it. I'm going to put it out on Amazon. You woke up that author part of you and you brought it more to the fore. Did you feel that there was a risk in doing that?
Sure.
I mean, I'm going to guess that took some courage.
A lot of, because, I mean, of all, my first trilogy has a very heavy erotic element. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a shrink, listen to her patients talking about their sexual behavior. Mm-hmm. I have to consider the book as erotic. So I decided to write in English to publish in the United States. Mm-hmm. Because if it was a failure, my clients would never know about that. The risk of mixing my legal career with my writing career. The problem is I forgot about something called social media.
In 2 days,
my book was out there. Mm. Everybody knew about it. So I had to face that. And some of my clients read my book. Most of them complimented me. They said they didn't know I had a so huge imagination. I didn't face any kind of prejudice because I'm a writer. Just once, defendant's lawyer told I was being very creative in my defense, and maybe that was the mind of a writer and not of a lawyer writing the defense. I had to take risks, and I was afraid. I was afraid.
It's a risk. It's definitely something that I have thought about as a professional. You know, how much of my art do I expose to social media, to the world, and how does that impact my like more like string professional identity? It's a risk to put yourself out there. So, you know, I admire that you did it and you thought you had yourself protected from it by publishing in the United States. And then it almost sounds like when people found out about it, that was a little bit of some of those bricks coming down. And then you had to reorganize, how do I want to build this up again? And I really appreciate your acknowledging that when you're trying to find this balance, that sometimes you do go backwards, and that when you move backwards, that's not failure.
Yeah, that's that.
So does it say anything? I know that a couple of your books have now been republished in Portuguese.
Oh, just two. I didn't have the time to translate.
Okay. So does that speak to maybe feeling confident enough and bold enough to put it out there in, you know, the mother tongue of Brazil?
5 gold medals after. Yes, I was confident. I said, okay, if it's good for United States and Canada,
love it.
It's going to be good for Brazil. No worries. The awards I've got really gave me confidence.
Yeah, because you've gotten quite a few.
Yeah. With my 4 books, there are already 6 gold medals,
yeah,
1 bronze, and I was finalist to 23 contests. So it's a lot. I think I'm doing the right thing here.
Well, yeah, you've got the Paris Book Festival. So you must represent France pretty well there, which is good. And Golden Book Awards and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Some great awards that made me very happy. I wasn't expecting for them. I just want to write a book.
It's great that you're finding that success and that you're having fun and that you're allowing yourself to really let that part of yourself fly.
Yeah.
I mean, because I see you as having like multiple passions, and you give them
multiple.
Their space and you let them do what they're going to do. I mean, I like this ride that you take yourself on with these books, right? You start a story and then you let it take you on the ride. And I think that's cool. And it probably speaks to how much fun you have with it.
I try to have fun with everything in my life.
That is definitely something that I have gotten from you today. People can't see you, but like you're lit up, not just with your lighting, but with your energy. You really seem to enjoy your work as a lawyer, and you really seem to enjoy your work as a writer. And yeah, it's inspiring.
As a traveler, and it sounds like you cook, you like to
read.
I know you speak like 108 languages.
No, not just 4.
Okay, just 4. I can barely do English, so.
I love it.
But that's part of curiosity. How could I understand the natives if I didn't study other language?
Right.
So I need it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So there's that discipline, which is neat too. That discipline is what keeps all these passions in their place.
Yeah. Perfect balance.
It's so fun.
So fun. And you've got a couple more books in the works?
Yeah, I'm finished. I always have writer's block when it comes to choose a title. Mm. So I still don't have a title. I have the book ready, going to last editions. And I'm writing another one already. But certainly this year, one or two books to be published.
Wonderful. I can't wait to look for them.
Adriana, it was so much fun talking to you today.
Yeah.
I hope that you enjoyed yourself.
A lot.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Great. Thank
oh,
you.
So good.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.
I love the lesson we just received about balance and structuring time for pleasurable creative interludes. Of course, it helps with artistic output, but I'm going to go on the record too to say that it also helps us stay better focused when we need to stay focused. If you enjoy the talk with Adriana as much as we did, please look for her books on Amazon and find the link to her website in this episode's description and on our website. The Kites and Strings website is www.kitesandstrings.com, and find us on Patreon if you'd like to do that totally pay what you can way of support. If you're unable to help financially, we understand, but do some word of mouth marketing for us and rate us on sites like Apple Podcasts. That's totally helpful too. You can find Kites and Strings on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and even YouTube. The Kites and Strings theme music is by Harrison Amir. Other original music is by Purple Planet Music at purpleplanet.com. Today's episode was produced and edited by me, Steve Plume, at Turning Stones Counseling, Inc. Be safe.